It's the last day of the month, which means we review the top news stories, the overlooked news stories here in Michigan that happened over the course of September. And joining me today is Rick Pluta, managing editor of the Michigan Public Radio Network. You hear him possibly every morning on your way into work, filing spots on what's happening in the legislature. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
And also with me is Tim Skubick, the longtime host of WKAR-TV's Off the Record.
Hello, Tim. Long time.
Long time.
Very long time.
I don't like the word host. It's sort of like presenting crumpets and tea at the door sort of thing. Let's go with Anchorman.
Anchor.
Yeah. Huh? Doesn't that have more
no really
sauce,
know.
Baby? Come on.
Ron Burgundy reference.
There you go, man.
Well, actually, the secret is Tim actually does meet us at the door in a smoking jacket holding a small tray.
A little ascot. Ferris the ascot.
I think we focus grouped the ascot didn't work. It did not work.
Nice.
Not
nice.
Middle class enough, you know what I mean?
I hear you. Certain segments, eliminate certain segments of the population.
Automatically.
That's right.
But we digress, right?
Indeed, before we even begin.
Yeah, I know. Welcome to the rest of this segment.
I mean, exactly.
Well, are we done yet? I thought that was a good open, didn't you?
It's a week, the month in digressions, we're going to call this segment. I want to open with get your top news stories of the month, or news story. Rick Pluta, why don't you start? What's the biggest story coming out of the month of September?
I don't know if it's the biggest story, but to me, I think it has pretty profound implications that and we're seeing it play out in both Michigan and Washington, how the Republican establishment is doing a big pushback against its Tea Party elements. The theme is that they're finally saying it's our party and we want it back. And so in Lansing, we're seeing it play out in the aftermath of the fight over extending Medicaid, and then it's filtered into the fight over Common Core, education standards, even levying the sales tax on internet sales. That the Chamber of Commerce Republicans are saying, look, there's stuff that we've needed to get done, and every step of the way, whether it's a new international bridge in Detroit, the Medicaid expansion, and the list goes on and on and on, that you guys are just standing in the way and causing problems, and we've had enough of it. And now we're seeing it play out in other state capitals, but also in Washington, D.C., with this whole threat of the shutdown, and especially in the Senate, some Republicans saying, look, it's this is just a bridge too far, versus some of the Tea Party elements who are saying, last best chance to stop Obamacare.
And somebody have a pack that we don't agree with one another, but I'm going to have to agree with him on this one. And now we're even, okay? But let me just add this.
I need to go somewhere and have a good cry.
Precisely. Have another glass of water.
I was hoping sparks, gentlemen.
No sparks. This is public.
Fair enough.
Public radio.
We're genteel.
Okay, precisely.
After the show, I'll explain what genteel means to me.
Thank you. Is it like an ascot?
Two E's.
Yes, exactly. There are elements, however, in the legislature that are still very sensitive to the Tea Party, and those would be the folks in the House and Senate who are in close competitive districts where they don't wish to hack off a very significant part of the base.
Competitive primary districts.
As they have a primary challenge.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so they tiptoe around this thing, and while other establishment Republicans may say it, look, they can't ignore the Tea Party at their own risk. Mm. I don't think Rick Snyder is going to lose this election because Tea Party people sit home, but he could. And we don't know at this read, but that is a factor. And so as they go about pushing back, they almost have to push back and embrace at the same time, which is impossible to do. Either you're pregnant or you're not.
And remember, one person's pushback, one person's frustration is another person's opportunity. And I'll just lay out one example that in Northeast Michigan, the looming fight in the state Senate over who's going to replace State Senator Howard Walker. And that is going to be a Tea Party versus establishment showdown.
And there will be lots of those as we move into this mm-hmm. election year. And at the end of 2014,
more of them at least,
we will wake up the day after the election in November and be able to determine how powerful, if any, are the Tea Party folks in this state. Look, if they lost on Medicaid expansion, they may lose on core curriculum. They've won so far on transportation. They mm-hmm. have bottled the governor up on that. They mm-hmm. won on the bridge. So it's a mixed
bag. They've stopped
bag.
The internet sales tax.
Stop, exactly. So they are a force to be reckoned with in the legislature. And you can continually watch the governor, who doesn't want to say anything. His line is, well, this is all part of democracy. Well, he's absolutely right. But it could be a part of democracy that hurts his agenda, and he ought to be concerned about that, and I think he is.
Let's move tangentially off this conversation, just to the Common Core. You both had mentioned that this is a Tea Party digging in their heels a little bit on this issue. Just last week, the House easily approved a resolution that allows the state to move forward with implementation of the standards, but there were a whole bunch of conditions and caveats and the
measures. Well, and it's sort of a classic example of exactly what we're talking about, that, you know, this was created by the nation's governors and school superintendents so that no one could come in and complain that this was Washington, D.C., the federal government, imposing a standard. Yet, you know, Tim, what happened?
That's exactly what they said.
Exactly. You know. And so –
don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is made up.
And so, you know, I mean, this is business groups going, you know what? We called for this. You know, the governors and the superintendents got together and did it. We did it in a way that we hoped would, you know, dodge that particular bullet, and it's still not good enough. So I think it's sort of almost, you know, an emblematic issue of that frustration.
Once again, the content of the proposal sort of gets lost in the politics of the proposal. Look, this is pretty straightforward. Every kid in Michigan, the theory goes, should be taught and given the exposure to the same information so that we don't have an uneducated kid in Ontonagon and a smart kid down in Bloomfield Hills.
Well, not just
that is the concept.
Well, not just that. That also there was this idea that across the country that some states had, you know, very vigorous curriculum standards, very vigorous testing standards. Others had tests that were, say, let's say, more relaxed. And so there was
What's your favorite color?
Yeah, right. It probably helps with federal funding to have a little easier.
But, but that's exactly it. And so the idea was that if, you know, if we all adopt, you know, some universal standards while still allowing states to make allowances for their own conditions, that we'll finally have a comprehensive apples to apples, oranges to oranges comparison to make about how our kids are doing regardless of which district and which state they are.
But then you have the specter of that ugly little thing called local control, which raises its head in this debate, which is we at the local level know what our kids need. Lansing, Washington, you don't need to check in because we're doing fine. Well, some of them aren't doing fine. And so I'm not sure how this plays out in the Senate. They tell us October 1st was the deadline.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not sure they're going to meet it.
Right. Well, we've certainly missed
– Better hurry
today. Let's set our watches, eh?
Yeah. But, you know, and it's also something that there's enough in there for everyone to dislike. If you're from the right, it's, you know, this national template that's being laid over schools. If you're from the left, and in some cases from the right, that, you know, there's a big conversation that I think we're really just at the beginning of about, you know, problems that become inherent with teaching to the test. I know in my kids' schools that actually the first part of the year is devoted to how to take the MEEP. And, you know, I assume later on it will be whatever the, you know, the successor exam is.
Well, and there are other things to come. We have a battle coming up over the science standards. What do we teach with science or history? Wait till we get into that stuff.
Oh,
we're going
down
into the
Civil War?
Oh, good.
All those in favor say aye. You know, it'll be a fascinating debate.
Speaking of a lack of compromise, we have a federal government showdown, in case you haven't been paying attention.
Is that in the papers?
I think it is. Okay. Just a little bit. You know, how
I've been meaning to check into that.
Yeah. It doesn't affect us, so don't worry about it.
Well, that's just it. How will that come back and impact Michigan? What are you hearing?
Spoiler alert.
Please.
If you're up in Sleeping Bear's Dunes, get your backpack out of there, okay? National parks will be closed. Good news, the mail service will continue. Rick will get his Social Security check on time. Medicaid will continue.
Tim's already exhausted his benefits.
Precisely.
That's how far along he is.
I went through those in the first year.
There are 50,000 federal workers here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yep, out of 800,000 nationwide.
Correct.
Security at the airports, such as it is, will continue. The guys and ladies in the control tower will continue. Military continues. But it's going to be – the record was 21 days in 1995. But again, this is not about the issue. It's about the politics. And the question is, if they shut it down – and I call me stupid, but I think they'll find a way out of this thing before midnight. But if I'm wrong, erase this tape. But the point is, who gets blamed? Who do you think?
Well, all of the metrics seem to suggest that Republicans would take the blame if you know, if that happens. And as a matter of fact, in Michigan, we're already seeing the Snyder administration sort of trying to create a buffer that
distance, we call
right. It's not what Republicans are doing. It's what Washington is doing. In Michigan, we've made tough choices. We've prepared for crises like this that we're ready to go. And Washington should take its example from Michigan. Yada yada yada. A whole lot of that. But there are people who, there are still plenty of Tea Partiers who seem to believe that if it comes to that, that the public will coalesce
well,
behind
them.
Well,
give the Tea Party credit because they are acting on their convictions. They believe that this is the leverage that they have to defund Obamacare, and come heck or high water, they're going to use it. And in politics, you use leverage when you have it.
But again, this seems to be the running thread through the segment. But it's this clash of convictions that there are other Republicans and certainly Democrats who are saying, well, wait a second, compromise is also
precisely
part of our history.
John Boehner, I do not cover Mr. Boehner, but I've read enough books on him. Left to his own devices, he would have had a deal by now with the administration and the Senate Democrats to fix this thing. His problem is in his caucus.
He's got to maintain his own position.
Well, he does, but at some point, maybe he needs to stand up and say, look, if you guys want to take me out, bring it on.
You know what? Yeah. But look at that, and just what an assault this really is on the political culture, that this job usually would attract people who are deal makers. People who look at all the details and try and figure out the path through the middle that gets you to something that
you
everyone
get something,
finds acceptable.
I get something and we go forth together.
That's not the culture.
And deal making is now kind of anathema, at least with within a critical mass of that group.
You're listening to Current State on WKAR. I'm Joe Lindstroth, sitting in for Mark Bayshore today, and I'm speaking with Rick Pluta.
If you're still listening, you're listening to Current State.
Public Radio
you
Network.
You don't think we scared them all away?
And Tim Skubick, the longtime host of WKRTV's Off the Record. Gentlemen, I'm going to bring it back to Michigan here.
It is Monday.
People are going to be
inundated. We're not on our game yet, okay?
With the national pundits talking about this all day. Some other legislation coming out this last month. There have been some efforts to institute requirements to receive certain entitlements. Last Thursday, the Michigan House approved a bill where jobless residents who fail to pass a drug test requested by their prospective employer could lose benefits.
It's very squishy.
Yeah,
don't
get into the details because it's ugly. Okay, yeah. they want to go for the big picture.
That's the idea, though, right? That's the argument. People say this sounds great coming
up. It sounds
precisely
like you're holding
their feet
to the fire.
I can go home and run on this. Please don't ask me how it's not going to work.
How will it be implemented or not?
Exactly. There's a lot of wiggle room.
Well, what it is that you could go in, and if you refuse to take the test or if you fail the test, that if your employer reports it to the state, then you could lose your benefits. And there are actually a lot of reasons why a prospective employer might choose not to play that game, that there are liability issues. And so instead of sort of getting tough, it's really kind of maybe. And another question that people are asking is, might it not have the effect of discouraging people from applying for jobs or going, maybe I'll go here, but but not.
Well, and the
here.
Interesting thing, I don't think it gets there, but what would the governor do if it got to his desk? It's another one of those issues. It's not on my agenda.
I believe that's not on his agenda.
It's clearly not on his agenda. I think if it does get through the House, I think it dies in the Senate. But if it got to the governor, would he stand up and say, look at guys, this goes just a little too far? Or does he sign it? I don't know.
Right.
Can we move into another issue?
We can.
Okay. I was just going to.
You did the segue for me, Rick.
We'll take it from here, Joe.
speak for yourself.
How about adoptions?
We're just going to have faith-based adoptions. Exactly.
Allowing faith-based adoption agencies that take public funding could sort of have a a moral opt-out.
Now, just a background, the Michigan House's Families, Children, and Seniors Committee
approved it.
Three different bills that they combined for that. Okay.
But this is one where the Snyder administration is pushing back. They actually – they opposed this bill and they said don't send it to us in in this form because it goes too far. Now, it was presented as something that really just codifies what the state does already and what – basically, it's what the state does right now is, with a little bit of a shrug and a wink that if they think that an agency will have a problem with one family or one family situation, they'll send them somewhere else. But, this is all happening under the backdrop of a big federal case that's, coming up in Detroit next month that could, prospectively strike down Michigan's ban on gay marriage, which could at the very least it could change adoption laws to allow same-sex couples to adopt. And so the Michigan Catholic Conference and other faith-based adoption agencies, and they're the ones who really do the work right now. The state isn't in that business anymore, are saying, we could be forced to either do something that is against our moral convictions or just stop doing it. And so they're trying to find it out. So that's that's what this maybe is they should,
the timing of here is not random.
Maybe they should check with the Pope and maybe he's changed his mind on this.
But
there it
I'm
is.
Sorry,
that's possible. We always wait for another.
Now we've
another,
lost everybody.
Another another nice civil comment to come out of the Pope's mouth.
Careful, careful.
When we say Pope, we mean Tim.
Yeah,
let's not go there,
indeed.
Guys.
Senior Capital Score correspondent just wasn't enough for you.
There you go. That's right.
So we're coming up. 2014 is a big election year. Typically, big legislation coming out of the state kind of tends to stop. People batten down the campaign.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything controversial.
Exactly. So are we? Is there a race here? It's coming up to the end of the year. Is there other big legislation you see?
Continues to befuddle me. We had Ms. Warren, State Senator
Rebecca Warren of Ann
Arbor. Yeah, and she was quite pervasive or strong in her argument that this transportation thing's not dead. I think it's on life support. I'd be very surprised if they pop something between now and the end of the year.
I think they've dropped all the tinker toys on the table and they're trying to see if they can build something that'll work before the end of the year.
I think the governor has significantly backed off of his $1.2 billion figure. That's not the number anymore. But what is the number? How do they get there? But she seems to think that the talks continue and something might happen. I'm a doubting Timmy.
There are also some people who are still hoping that they could do some kind of a auto insurance overhaul, which is another really tricky one to to get done. And but what's happened is we've gotten through some big fights. The Medicaid fight was huge. Common Core is still going on, and people are just still feeling a little battered and bruised. And there's that question of whether or not there's just the political energy left to get something big done.
We only have a few minutes, gentlemen. I want to move off the legislature, if we can. Slightly. Is it? It's a little hard to move completely off.
Hey,
the
you're the one who started with baseball.
You're right. That's a great point. Revenue sharing was brought up again this month. There's a long simmering issue. The House Fiscal Agency reported that the state government spending has increased 1% a year since 2004. The Michigan Municipal League cites a Citizens Research Council of Michigan study that says it's up 26%, and yet almost $5 billion have been cut out of cities.
Costs are up.
Costs are up.
Much,
is
I like
this
the state's
ongoing
response.
Debate?
If you don't like what you're getting, raise your local revenue. The trickle-down economics, okay? Yeah. I don't know what it is, why they've got something against cities, but they have obviously lost some money.
Well, it's we've just come through a pretty tough decade, and we've seen it with university funding, we've seen it with school funding, we've seen it with revenue sharing. That where there's been a discretionary pot, the people who rely on that are saying that the state's been breaking some promises as
well, how
to
higher
how
education?
Supposed to handle.
How
I said universities would be another another example of that. Although in the case of the local governments, they feel like they made a pact with the state decades ago about how taxes were going to be collected.
The problem is none of the people that made the pact
are
still
here. Right?
Exactly.
Except for Tim.
Right, and I was not part of the deal.
Right to work, again, moving on to the Supreme Court with the state workers' unions, Michigan Civil Service Commission.
This is not on the constitutionality of right to work.
Right. Correct.
Okay, but people got that story wrong because my radio station calls, oh, they're going to – no, I said, no, 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 this is on whether it's civil servants are covered.
State civil servants, because there's a separate – a codicil of the state constitution that deals with them that says that the Civil Service Commission sets the rules for
the
civil service workers,
right.
Not the legislature, not you know, not these state laws. And so now it'll go to the Supreme Court for that to decide. And this is basically, you know, the unions throwing the sandbags down in front of the rising tide, trying to find at least, you know, one small area where, you know, they could, you know, shield that membership from the effects of right to work.
The appeals court in August ruled that the right to work law does apply to state workers. So that's where we are with the Supreme Court.
Right, exactly.
We're in the middle of contract negotiations. So,
Segueing into the Supreme Court, Tim Skubick, earlier this month you wrote about the love and friendship emanating from the Supreme Court.
Somebody read it to you, right, Joey? Come on.
That's right. It's audio. Audiobooks. We'll be talking about services
clean
about that
audio.
Later.
This is public radio. It appears like there's a new day. Shucks. You know, as I wrote in the piece, whenever you had a writer's block and had nothing to write about, you always went to the Supreme Court because they were always messing up something from a political standpoint. Now it looks like they've got their act together and everybody's hunky-dory on the collegiality.
Well, there are two things. One going on was that the Chief Justice had reached the point of genuine frustration about, you know, the way the court – not only the way the court was working, but the court's reputation. And we even see this play out in ways that are actually, you know, tangible that matter, that, you know, good Supreme Courts have simple, clean opinions, not a lot of concurrences and stuff like that, so that the law is easy for attorneys and judges to follow when they deal with similar situations, you know, going forward. And we were sort of started breaking back to that. But I remember
what's the real world? What's the real world implications? Why does anyone care?
That if you've got a court that's fractured and bickering, then you don't get clean laws that are simple to follow. And it depends on what the cases are. If you
dissents, concurring,
and if I may, more importantly, the public's view of those decisions becomes important. Mm. Is there any confidence in the court
as legitimacy,
that they are really legal folks or just political?
But
hacks?
But this has turned into a real. It would be a charm offensive Bob Young is, you know, sort of, you know, witty and droll and has that kind of sense of humor, and Mary Bridget McCormick, the newest Democrat, is sort of a charming presence. I remember their first date when she was arguing before the court on a discrimination case, and he just thought that she was brilliant, and we're now seeing that play out on the bench.
Gentlemen, less than a minute. What will you be looking for in October? What's the big stories you'll be following up for? Pick one. Tim Skubick.
What do they do between now and the end of the year? And I don't think it's a heck of a lot.
I'll give you two. The fall agenda and what they can and cannot get done. But there will be one big issue that Right to Life of Michigan will turn in its signatures for an initiated law to create more restrictions on abortion. This would be the requiring insurance riders for that coverage.
Very interesting. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure, always fun. Actually, my first time getting to play with you two on the radio. It's been fun.
You go take a shower.
Yeah, we'll see now if we're invited back.
Right, exactly. I think this may be it.
Rick Pluta is the managing editor of the Michigan Public Radio Network, and Tim Skubick is a longtime host of WKAR.
Anchor.
Longtime anchor. Thank you, gentlemen. Jesus.